Oh, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What is up? What is up?
What is up? Well, people don't know this. We started about 5 minutes ago, and then the reception was so bad we had to reset, which is totally fine. I like this room. Your baseballs.
Thank you.
What's going on here?
Thank you. And before I talk about the baseballs, anybody that watches my channel will fully understand what was going on with my Wi-Fi in the card room. So this is my rec room. That's the ball wall behind me. I've got 240 signed Cubs baseballs in those cases.
You're close to a million. Are you going for a million signed balls too?
No. Why not? No. This is like half the collection. I ran out of wall space.
Oh my gosh. Your wife is a saint for what she allows you to do.
Yes, she is.
So impressed. Well, for folks that have not seen our first episode, it is the most watched bench clear episode of 2022. Almost 15,000 views. And we talked about your journey to selling sports cards full time. So we struck a chord with people, apparently. So we knew we had to get back together today to talk about saying 4 months later, what's going on. I'll put a link right above so you can watch that episode. It's well worth the listen. So we won't touch on some of that stuff today. I want to start with a very general question. And it's a lot of people are freaking out. They're freaking out because they maybe got into the hobby last year or maybe even early this year. And it's just slow moving. Cards aren't selling for as much as they thought. The prices they paid 6 months ago aren't relevant anymore. And there's a little bit of panic when it comes to resellers. So from your perspective, kind of what's your overall view of the hobby right now?
Well, it's definitely, as a seller myself, it's hard to come out and say, don't panic, everything is fine. Because there is a sharp decline in sales. And I want to be transparent, as a seller myself, that yeah, this I think we, many of us who have been in the hobby pre-pandemic expected a little downturn. I'm a realist. Is the hobby down from where it was a year ago? Absolutely, 100%. There's no denying. There's a sharp decline, especially in certain sectors within the cards. But generally speaking, I think we're in a great place. The hobby was already on an uptick pre-pandemic, and that was just a steroid shot in 2020. And I think there was a lot of negativity with some of the influencers and the celebrities that came in. They have, may have left, or they're much quieter now that things have settled down. But I think all of that exposure that they were able to give the hobby with their followers who were not in touch with the trading card industry, I think that really helped. Maybe in the interim, it was, bad for, collectors, but I think in the long term, it really helped. And we've got a lot of people that have stuck around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. And I mean, you're a volume seller. Your sell-through rate's what, 1% ish, a little bit less than 1%.
Less. Yeah. I'm hovering right now around 0.55% peak pandemic, peak hobby. Wow. I was 2.3%, which is insane.
That's insane.
And there was a sharp decline. And in when I went full time in October of last year of 2021, I was at 1.2% on the sell through rate. By the end of December, that was down to like 0.75%, which is kind of where I expected things to be. It's fallen a little further than where I had projected those numbers to be, but I'm not, by any means, I'm not panicking, but yeah. it takes more work, obviously, with those numbers. It takes a lot more work to make the same amount of sales.
Yeah, for sure. And we're already geeking out on some numbers, which is great. So for folks that don't know what a sell-through rate is on eBay, it tells you, thankfully, but at a 1% sell-through rate, that means you're selling through 1% of your inventory a day, right? That's how they calculate it.
Correct. Yeah.
So for people that are listening to that, they're thinking, okay, man, Bo must move through a ton of inventory to make it worth his while. And that's true. You do. If you don't list, you don't provide for your family is basically what that number is telling you.
Exactly. That's the biggest difference from going to an office where you can just kind of put on cruise control, where if you do that at home and, selling cards from my basement, that that affects, you know, there's no paycheck that's going to come no matter what, you know, if I sit at a desk all day and twiddle my thumbs or if I actually put in the work. So,
yeah, no doubt. So from a sales side, you're obviously having to work harder. You're having to get more inventory out there and, you know, like it's a numbers game for you right now on the sales side. On the buying side, are you finding that there's more opportunities for you to buy collections? I mean, you're a Goodwill savant. You know how to get all those great stuff on Goodwill. But like when you go to shows and you go to a lot of shows too, what are you seeing on the buying side? Are you in the driver's seat now?
Absolutely. 100%. You know, in 2020 and 2021, now there's this, you know, just like we saw 30 years ago in the 90s, there's this huge amount of exposure on cards. And well, you may have a million, you know, Aunt Rose sees a news, you know, is watching the news and she sees that this card sold for $1 million. And she calls, you know, you might have a $1 million card in your closet, you know, not realizing that that's, you know, not going to be the case. But so there's a lot of exposure. And so everybody sees these headlines of a $1 million sale and a 5 million, all these record setting auctions.
Yeah.
And they think that, you know, their 80s and 90s and whatever are, you know, all of a sudden worth a ton of money. And you're seeing these collections available, but they're available at, you know, obscene prices. And so it's just not worth looking into. But when the hobby flips and we go back to where, you know, a little normalcy here, then all of a sudden it's like people realize that those collections and those lots aren't worth, you know, as much as what they thought they were a year ago or 2 years ago. But also you have those people that came in for the quick buck. And now that quick buck isn't as easy. They just want to dump off everything. And that's when, you know, resellers can come in and really take advantage of, I mean, that sounds bad, but it's really the case. You know, take advantage of people just trying to cash out. You know, I don't want it. I'll sell it for pennies on the dollar. And so that's, you know, I am seeing a lot of that, more opportunities arising, you know, on the, you know, platforms that, you know, you can pick up these lots, Facebook Marketplace, you know, generally. But then it shows as well, you know, I'm finding bargain boxes that are loaded with cards because a lot of these guys just, you know, I don't want to deal with it. I'm, you know, quitting for the summer or, you know, doing my last few shows and I'm out. And so they're, you know, really marking down their prices.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm seeing the same thing. And it's unfortunate because on the Chasing Cardboard side, right, we'll go film these episodes and we're still dealing with the aftermath of the Wall Street Journal covering sports cards, you know, like that's going to take years to wear off for people to realize that ain't the norm, right? That is not the norm in sports cards. What's your sweet spot when it comes to buying collections? What are you kind of looking out for when you're kind of eyeing something to buy?
When it comes to collections, I will, and I'm low end, I'm a low end volume seller. So I, you know, I'm not chasing some of the stuff you're chasing on Chasing Cardboard.
Yeah.
But what I'm looking for is enough to really make it worth my while. So, you know, one collection in particular was, had, you know, a couple 70, you know, complete sets from the late 70s. And then just kind of a bunch of junk where I can get the price and I price out the 77, 78, 79 top sets. And basically my offer is what the range of the comps on those higher ticket items. So the rest of the volume is basically, you know, once I sell those three, they're quick sales, they're higher dollar sales. It pays for the collection or the lot. The rest is gravy. And that's where my profits lie. So that's kind of what I'm looking for with what I'm purchasing with bulk lots and smaller collections. I actually passed one on, I put an offer in and it was a father had passed away and the siblings were just looking for advice, trying to sell the collection. They reached out to me. You know, I advised if you sell it, you know, if you sell it individually, you're going to make a lot more money. And just kind of guided them. I helped them with, you know, a couple different dealers that set up at the card show I run. I said, I might be interested. me and one of my dealers went in and we put an offer in on the lot. And I was a little hesitant because basically it was a lot of money for a lot of, you know, smaller, you know, it was going to be several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
But the highest dollar card was maybe $300. So it was going to take a lot of work to get back, you know, what you put in. So, you know, sometimes it would have been a great collection to go through and have fun with. But at the end of the day, it would have been just too much work. Would we have made decent money? Absolutely. I think it was a great price for them. It was a good price for us, but it was going to be a lot of work. And sometimes you have to walk away, even though it's like, man, I would have loved to have some of those cards. At the end of the day, man, some of that work that goes into it just wouldn't have been worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. That actually brings up a point that I don't even know if you were trying to make, but you just made. And that is know what your strengths are. And when you're running a sports card business, especially, like, know what market you sell into and what your buyers want, because the second you start buying outside of that and trying to cram into it, like it's not worth your, you don't optimize your time very well. And like for me to go volume sell like you would be a waste of my time because I don't have people looking at that. I don't have the efficiencies you do and the mindset you do. And you knew.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did a show this past weekend and I didn't stay in my lane at the National last year.
Yeah.
Now at the National last year, this was just a side hustle. I had extra money. Just, you know, I'm going to speculate on some things. Well, I speculated on the wrong things. Uh-oh. And I bought in bulk on the last day of the show on Sunday, like 35 SGC basketball prism rookie slabs. And on the expectation, the market was down on basketball last summer, thinking, well, it's off season. And these were second tier rookies, you know, Grant Williams, Jaden McDaniels, some of those guys.
Yep.
And so I spent, I don't know, $500-$600 on these slabs. Basically, my buy-in per slab was $12 or $13 per slab.
Yeah, less than the cost of grade.
And yeah, and I moved a couple and then the rest just sat. And, you know, early on I had them at shows for $20 a slab. And then I dropped them down, show special, $10 a slab. And I still have them. I had at the show that I just, and this is, you know, almost a year later since I bought them, I think I had 12 slabs still out of 35. I had a third of the slabs that I bought, $5 a slab. And somebody actually came and bought me out. Didn't even, you know, he paid full price. He's like, I'm getting them for $5 a slab. So I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to throw a lowball offer at you. So I was happy, but I, you know, I lost, you know, that on those slabs, it was $144 investment. You know, I sold them for $60. So, you know, I like to be transparent about, it's not all about the wins. It's not about finding $100 card in the dollar bin. Yeah. Sometimes you swing and you miss.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And for those that are interested in entering the sports card market as a seller, I think it's fair to say you probably swing and miss more than you swing and hit a home run. At least from my perspective,
it's a learning curve is huge. Yeah,
it is.
You know, I came back into the hobby 2012 probably is when I kind of started getting serious, and it took me a couple years to like really start consuming a lot. And I really didn't start consuming a lot of hobby content until probably 2018. And so I took a lot of lumps in those, you know, between 2014 and 2018, I'd go to blowout cards on their Black Friday sales and I'd buy some of the garbage. And then I started to realize, you know, they have threads on the forums and you know, social media and hobby Twitter and Facebook groups. And then I started to just kind of, you know, soak it all in like a sponge and try to learn as much. And that really helped me just watching YouTube videos, watching, you know, your videos, watching, you know, I've learned stuff from, Jeremy Lee on Sports Card Live markets that I don't, you know, I'm not going to enter, but if I see opportunities, you know, in a bargain box, if I see a Dunkin' Go-Nuts or I know those from watching those types of videos. So, you know, it's a long learning curve and it took several years to, you know, get to a point where I'm comfortable with, you know, with making some of the purchases I do.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a video on Breaker Culture, about a month ago now. And my premise was, in the sports car world or any reselling business, like, you have to be okay to fail, like continue to put yourself out there and try. And the sports car world is a premier example of, you're going to have to just stick your neck out there and start learning, because the intricacies of the hobby run so deep and are so hard to learn. Like, until you get a card in your hand, you look at it and think, wait, where's the comp for this? And you don't know how to, like, you just got to do it. You just got to do it over and over again. You had a goal coming in, speaking of doing it over and over again, of getting the 50,000 cards in your store inventory. I remember I was talking about this specifically last time. How close are you to that? You must be getting close.
No.
Okay.
Not even close. I think my goal was, what, 50,000 by October 15th. And yeah. As we speak, I think I'm at 14,300.
Okay. So you're not getting it. You're not hitting your goal.
Which I've learned. So the thing, and I think what I've learned is, I didn't anticipate, there's a balance here between, you know, it takes time shipping, it takes time listing.
Yeah.
And when I'm doing both sides, you know, there's an opportunity cost. If you spend the whole day listing, the next day you're going to have to spend a whole day shipping. So you're going to lose out on one or the other. So I try to keep it balanced. I've become, actually, within the last couple of weeks, a little more efficient on the listing side, in getting, you know, what I want listed. But it's definitely a goal I want to chase, but I also want to put up cards that will sell, because at the end of the day, the goal is to make money and make sales. And, you know, 50,000 active listings is awesome and a great number. But if it's, you know, if it's just cards to list and it's not, you know, stuff that's going to move, then I'm not interested. So a lot of what I do list, you know, moves, and I'll, you know, move, you know, right off the bat. I put up about 110 listings this morning, and I think I've already sold 5 items in just, you know, 4 or 5 hours. So, as long as I'm listing, you know, I do want to get to that 50,000 is still, you know, a number I want to hit. It's likely not going to happen here in 2022. So maybe, you know, aim for next year. And as I continue to, you know, become more efficient, you know, I can reach that number faster, as long as I'm putting the right items in.
Yeah. It sounds like an ungodly number, but then you look at the room behind you downstairs or your basement, it's like, okay, you got well more than 50,000 cards right behind you. So you had to get your butt in gear, Bo. Come on. Step it up. The inventory is there. Yeah, no doubt. So you talk about your efficiencies with listing. I think people would love to know, like, your daily process. I mean, what is your daily process now that you're all in full time? You've been doing it for a while now. Walk me through your day when it comes to running your business.
Typically I wake up 5:30 or 6 a.m. You know, do the morning stuff. By 6:30, I'm in the card room, getting prepared. I do a live show every morning at 7 a.m. Central. So between 6:30 and 7, I'm, you know, if I don't have a topic ready, I'm thinking of a topic. I'm shipping just to get some shipments out. And then 7 o'clock, I'm on my YouTube channel until typically 8. I'll go up for a second cup of coffee. What I've learned is what helps me is I'll grab my second cup of coffee and I'll kind of unwind after my YouTube show. I'll go outside if it's nice, sit on the patio, have a cup of coffee, and then just kind of plan out. It's kind of my Zen moment for 15, 20 minutes. I'll plan out, you know, kind of the rest of the day, even though I have it essentially baked in that I know what I'm going to do the next day. But it still kind of gives me time to think about how to tackle that. So I'll go back downstairs. And I like to keep a good balance. I don't want to sit and ship for 6 hours on end, 4 hours on end. So I'll do some shipping for a couple hours. I'll come upstairs. My office where I list is upstairs, and I'll list, you know, 50 or 100 items. come back downstairs, do some shipping, go back upstairs. So that's basically my day, is kind of a balance between shipping and listing. On an average day, sometimes there's, you know, if it's after a card show and I've picked up some bulk, there'll be some sorting. But for the most part, it's just a lot of shipping, a lot of listing. It's not glamorous by any means. People think, oh, wow, that's cool. You sell baseball cards. It's like, yeah, it's not as cool as it's. I mean, yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it. But there's a lot of sitting and printing off shipping labels and just a lot of, you know, kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Just monotonous tasks. Yeah. But it's, I enjoy it. I still enjoy it. I love what I do, and I enjoy the freedom it allows. You know, pedal to the metal, hammer down.
That's right. You, the monotony, the grind, if you will, is real. I can relate to that. So, you know, when people, you know, in your profession, you're in a party or you're with you're some friends and someone asks you what you do. Do you with pride say that you sell sports cards and you're confident and you say, or do you beat around the bush because like you don't want to go down the path of like having to explain what you do? What is your stance on that? Because people waver.
Well, it's interesting. It kind of depends on the party I'm, you know, I'm with. The interesting part is my first career was in sports broadcasting. And so when you're on radio and you're talking, people like, oh my God, you're on the radio. And, you know, oh, you get to travel and do all this, when I worked in college athletics. And so I had the cool job. Everybody wanted to talk about my job. Then I went into logistics and I basically sold a service of transporting a company's freight from point A to point B. And it was boring and I didn't like my job and I didn't want to talk about it. And nobody wanted to hear about the supply chain of various companies across the nation. And then I go to selling baseball cards and all of a sudden it's a cool job. People want to hear about it again. But I tend to be like, I sell baseball cards. And normally people react with, oh my God, that's so cool. And I'm actually surprised by the amount of people that, you know, think it's a really cool thing to go out, create your own business and do what you love. And I think I take that for granted often that, you know, it was a big, I'm not much of a, I don't take chances or I'm not a gambling man. So, this was a big leap for me, to take that jump. So, I probably should say it with a little more pride, but I tend to be a little, you know, a little under my breath. Yeah. I sell baseball cards.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. Some people are like, oh, I don't care what people think. And then I'm in your camp right there. It's like, I still kind of, when I say it, I'm like, I don't say that with conviction,
right?
Which I should, right? Because I love it. It's, to your point, I love sports cards. Do I love my family and everything else more? 100%. But do I love dealing with sports cards? Yeah, I do.
Definitely.
And the fact that you and I can make it work, pretty cool.
Yeah,
pretty
cool. Absolutely.
But you obviously are full time. So let me ask you this, because this is a question I'm sure is burning in everybody's mind. Again, most watch episode of 2022. So I'm going to take that for what it's worth. You want to enter sports card selling. You want to run a sports card business starting right now. We're arguably in a recession. What do you tell somebody that comes up to you and asks you that? What advice would you give them?
That's a great point. Before I tackle the advice, I will say, and I'm going to be completely honest here. All things equal, if I did not take that leap in October of 2021 and I was still working my full-time job in selling cards on the side as I was a year ago, I would not have taken this leap. I would not go into selling cards full-time because of those sell-through rates. You know, I think I mentioned it earlier, 1.2% in October. You know, I thought, okay, on the high end, it's still going to drop, but I think on the high end, a 1% sell-through rate. On the low end, 0.6, 0.7%. But I don't think I would have been prepared, or I think I would have been much more uneasy about making that transition. Again, I'm not one to make those yep. leaps and take that gamble. So all things being equal, today I would not have made that jump to selling cards full time. However, that doesn't mean it wouldn't have been successful. That doesn't mean I'm not having success. I am. And I think a lot of that has to do with the running start I had during 2020 and 2021 put me into position to where I am to survive these lulls in the hobby as it declines. So I think I would offer the same advice that I offered in the previous video is, yeah. you know, make sure the numbers work for you. And that's different for everybody. Everybody's situation is different, whether it's having a family, you know, health issues, because health insurance, if you're going self-employed, you're going to have to pay for health insurance. So everybody's situation is different. So make sure the important things in life are covered and accounted for before, you know, making any decisions like that. That all works out. Make sure you have your path in a business plan, you know, in place, and then take it from there and do the grind. But yeah, I would be a little more hesitant moving forward than what I was a year ago.
Yeah, no, that's brutal honesty right there. I appreciate that. Yeah. So I think what I'm hearing is starting fresh right now in this economic environment would be really tough. And you have to even more so, you can't fly by the seat of your pants right now. Like you have to have a legitimate plan if you're going into this. And I don't know if you would agree with this, but I feel like now versus even 2 or 3 years ago, to build up a business on eBay is harder to do. Like there's a lot of loopholes you have to jump through. You just can't start a new account on eBay and expect like tomorrow to be a power seller.
Right.
Like it's a year's process now. Like it takes time to build the credibility. eBay rewards guys like you and me who kick butt on our eBay accounts.
Yeah.
They demote newbies and new sellers who haven't built up the credibility even more so than they did 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, sorry if anyone's watching thinking this is your easy pill starting an eBay business selling sports cards, but it can be done. It can be done.
Absolutely. We want you to start. But you don't want to give people false hope. Like, hey, this guy did it. You can too. You know, you got to be real and say you can do it, but it's going to be a lot of hard work and it's going to be tough.
Yeah, for sure. You nailed it a few minutes ago. It is the grind part of it is what people underestimate. Like you can do it. You can do anything, right? You can run any business, but it's the stuff that you don't see under the covers, like the 5 hours listing and then the 5 hours shipping and then the emails at night. Like that takes its toll. To do that one day is easy. To do it every day of the week is tough. It doesn't matter what kind of music you got going in Spotify. Like you're going to lose interest in doing that really soon.
So I had, I did the show this weekend. So when I do trips, or shows, you know, because I'm shipping usually like throughout the day, like I mentioned, I kind of go back and forth. So when I'm gone for the day, I don't have that. And I think it was Monday. It was Monday morning. I mentioned I have a lot of shipments to get out for eBay. And somebody asked me, well, what's a lot? Because a lot is subjective, and a lot of shipments to some people that casually sell on eBay is 10, 12, 15. For sure. You know, a lot for me, I had 248 shipments on Monday morning. So, you know, it used to be, I would get nervous with 12. If I had 12 open shipments to send out, it's like, oh my gosh, I have double digits. And then as I continued to scale up, and then it was 25, 50, then it was 100. Oh man, I'm in triple digits. I've got to get down under 100. And now that number's 200 because it's, you know, as you scale up, you get comfortable and you know your limits and in what you can tackle in a time. So hopefully that continues to rise as I continue to scale up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. That is a lot though. A heavy day for me is about 60.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say it. A normal day now is about 60. A heavy day is, you know, 80. 240. That's legit. That's like, I got to block my afternoon to ship.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm glad it rained that day because I didn't have that tease of the sunshine, the warm summer day.
Exactly. Exactly. What are you seeing in terms of card show the vibes? Like you're a dealer, so you're picking up things from the customers coming in and you're also buying. How are you feeling? The card show scene was insane a year ago.
Yeah.
We're kind of in the valleys and the dips and everything going on in the card show world. What are you seeing right now in the card show world?
The shows I attend, there's still heavy traffic. It is down. It's down from even January, February, but it's still pretty heavily trafficked, especially for summer months here in May, June, now into July. I did a show in Janesville, Wisconsin on Sunday, the day before 4th of July. I went in thinking, oh man, this shows, it was a beautiful 90 degree sunny day on Sunday, and it was great traffic. I was really impressed with the traffic. The show that I promote in Madison, Wisconsin, heavy traffic. It's a monthly show. I'm at 120 sold out tables every month, and the traffic is there, down some months, but there's still good traffic. There's still a buzz in the rooms. The one thing I've noticed from like a buying standpoint from customers, there has been in the shows that I've attended, what I've seen, there's been kind of a trend away from slabs. People are looking for raw, whether that's to flip and grade themselves, or just because of the current market on slabs. Like I mentioned, my $5 bargain box slabs. There were three tables with $5 slabs, and we're not talking 98 Bowman like prospects that never panned out. We're talking like modern day current rookies in the $5 slab boxes. So, but people are still, you know, we have a group subber that sets up at the shows in our area, and you know, he's still pretty busy. So people are still, you know, submitting, but I have seen, and I've talked to other dealers, where they've noticed the trends are with raw cards, bargain boxes are becoming, more popular than what they were months ago. So those are some of the trends that I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's curious. Cause I do wonder if a little bit, you know, people coming in thinking I want to build my collections, maybe back to that whole, like we've shifted from investor mindset back to collector mindset. And now people are thinking, I want to start building collections again, which I hope that is the case. But yeah, there is definitely slab fatigue in the hobby still. And I think it's going to slow down eventually. It's going to swing back the other way.
Yeah.
We're going to have that gap where we didn't have a lot of grading going on because it's too expensive. Everything was closed down. But that's an interesting perspective. $5 slabs. That's mind blowing, right? People are just so sickened that they got their slabs back, that they're selling them for below what the card is worth and what they paid for the slab.
Yeah.
That's a brutal place to be.
Unreal.
Unreal. Unreal. What are you thinking for the National? Do you think the National is going to have a pretty good vibe? Are you going?
I am not. I ran the numbers, and you know, this is year one for me as a business. Yeah. You know, my in the door price was going to be $1,500 to $1,700, and I'm a volume guy. So it wasn't one piece of the pie or the puzzle. It was collectively every piece. The flight, the travel, you know, the passes to get in, the food and drinks, you know, for 5 days. And then I'm a bulk guy. And when when the show is in Chicago, it's a 2-hour drive. I can fill my SUV up with bargain boxes that I pick up in bulk and drive them home. So it's much easier. So that expense, just it, you know, as much as I would love to see friends and meet, you know, you guys for the first time and others, it just, that price tag is pretty hefty for year one, in my business. And, it'll be back in my neighborhood, you know, next year in Chicago. So looking forward to that. As what I think, you know, it's the National, it's always going to have a buzz. Will it have the buzz as last year? I don't think so, because I think there's just something special about Chicago and that venue. But it doesn't matter where you stick the National. There's going to inside the room, there's going to be a buzz no matter where it's at. So I think there's still going to be a buzz. There's still going to be a lot of deals. I don't see any, you know, any slowdown at the event in Atlantic City.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I'm on the other side. I think it's going to be brutal this year.
Really?
I do. So many people that I know are like avid national goers every year are not partaking. And it's a combination of it's too expensive. It's in Atlantic City. You know, I'm kind of just fatigued in the hobby. Like, I think a combination of a lot of things, it's the national. It'll obviously check most of the boxes, but
sure.
Compared to what we're used to, I have a feeling it's just not going to be that good.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I'll agree on that sentiment is compared to even 2019 because I think a lot of people don't realize how hot the hobby had become even before the pandemic. I mean, 2017, we started to kind of see that rise. Yep. By 18 and 19, there was a big buzz around cards, especially in 2019. You know, that national was a lot of fun. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the turnout will be like this, you know, in this month.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. 2019 was awesome. Coming off like Acuna, Otani, yeah. Soto, and you had Luka Doncic, and you had Zion on the horizon. Like everything was just buzzing the right way.
Yep. We've had some down rookie classes and draft classes the last couple of years in the key sports with the, you know, football and basketball. I think in a few years that's going to flip when we'll have Bronny James, and I know he's not a highly touted basketball prospect, but he's going to be a number one hobby darling because of who his last name is, and Arch Manning, which that could start here pretty soon with NIL in his commitment to Texas. So, you know, there's some big names on the horizon that will be commanding some big bucks at the hobby.
For sure. And not to mention we're having a sneaky good rookie class in the MLB this year. Like Julio Rodriguez is no joke. Like Bobby Witt, no joke. Like a couple of these guys are thinking, oh man, this could be really fun.
Absolutely.
I like the down year right now because you can go snag some pretty decently priced rookies of these guys.
Right, right.
Yeah. I want to touch on something you mentioned earlier. I wrote a note here. You mentioned like some efficiencies on your listing side. And this is for all these geeky, you know, eBay sellers. What have you done to become more efficient when you're listing cards?
So the number one thing is File Exchange, which is basically a bulk lister. It's just Excel. That's all it is. It's a template that eBay provides. It can be kind of a chore to get set up to your parameters, and you know, with any spreadsheet, you know, one minor letter that's out of whack will, you know, produce, you know, negative results.
Yeah.
Won't upload. But now that I've got that going, I mean, it's just, I'm able to copy and paste many of the, you know, item descriptions, you know, some of those, metrics. And then I use a Fujitsu, bulk feed scanner, so I can scan, and I use Image Shack that coincides with the bulk lister through eBay, and just getting that right and organizing how many cards are on the page, which order they're in, so then I can bulk copy and paste that into the spreadsheet. I think File Exchange, probably number one most important thing for me to keep efficient. A thermal label printer is right there along with it. Yeah. And the scanner is a big help as well.
Yeah. Are you, so like I have a Fujitsu 7160, I think is what it is. Are you auto cropping like you're scanning a card, it's auto cropped, it's done front and back?
Yes. Yep.
What program do you use to do that?
I just use the Fujitsu program.
Really?
Yeah. Man, and it crops it, and it's not perfect, but it gets what it needs to get. It gets the card. The one setback I have is it often looks like a stock photo. It's almost too good.
Too perfect.
Yes. So, you know, I get that question a lot. Is this a stock photo? So that's, you know, that's about the only thing.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's, I'm with you on some of that stuff. You're like, gosh, darn it. Can we make it look a little more rugged?
Right.
Can it look exactly. A little less perfect. That's awesome. All right. So last question for you. So back half of the year, we touch base again, let's say in January, what do we think we're talking about from the hobby's perspective from the second half of 2022? What do you think happens in the next 6 months? What's the big trend you think?
Oh, man, that's put me on the spot here. I don't think we're going to see, as far as the where the market is, I don't think we're going to see too much change one way or the other in the macro viewpoint of the hobby itself. I think we're going to be pretty much right where we're at, because I do read some things on, so, oh, we're ready for a bounce back, and this is just the downturn. And usually when I see that, when did you get into the hobby? Yeah. And a lot of times it's 2018, 19, 20. And I think, you know, the longer you've been in, you've seen these ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
I think we understand, those of us that have been in it for, you know, decades, that 2021 was definitely an outlier. And that was a peak. That will we get back to those times? Yes, but it may be 20 or 30 years. It's not going to be, you know, next February. So I think generally speaking, we're going to be in the same boat, similar boat than where we're at right now with market trends. Who knows what's on the horizon with news and in 6 months. I mean, we had such a crazy start to the year of 2022 with like headline news every single day. Like, what can top this?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, here's another bombshell story that drops the next day.
Yeah.
I'm interested to find, and I don't know what the future holds, but I'm interested to find where the NIL cards fall. Mm. I love Bowman. I worked in college athletics, so I've followed the NIL stuff very closely. And I'm curious to find where the hobby takes it, because I know a lot of people say, well, the hobby hasn't accepted stars and, you know, Team USA cards and college prism cards, but this is a completely different entity. And, you know, I think a lot of us who say, you know, who kind of have those feelings, you know, we don't think like a 20-year-old collector. They have a completely different viewpoint on, you know, the collectibles market. And how will that next generation, I think that's the key, how do the generation, you know, younger than us take to the NIL cards? Does it catch on? And I don't think we can compare it to Panini draft picks or Team USA stuff. I think it's a whole different entity. I'm a big believer in Bowman U football. You know, I've put my money where my mouth is. We'll see. I think by September, we'll find out. You know, it's airbrushed and you can't have the college names. That's going to change, with Fanatics with their deal. So, you know, we will likely see, you know, depending on who they have a contract with, what universities, it's a lot of them. So I think that's what I'm most anxious to see in the hobby is how those NIL cards take, because by January of 2023, you know, we'll have a good, for football, at least we'll have a, you know, the entire season.
Yeah. Those are some really good things to chew on. And I think the beautiful thing in all this is that in a free market, like we live in, the market's going to tell us very clearly what they think. I'm very interested to see some of the results of that too. Well, cool, man. I madly appreciate what you do. And for folks that don't know, I'll have links to your show, your daily show in the show notes below. Go check Bo out. 1 million Cubs. You do great work and you grind it out. And there's a lot of lessons a lot of us can learn. So thank you for that, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate all you do.
You got it, brother. All right. Back to the grind.
Awesome.
See ya.
All right. Later, man. Fuck.